A suicide bomb in a Sunni mosque in Baghdad earlier this week killed 28 people, including a member of Iraq's parliament. The violence follows a series of attacks over the weekend in various Iraqi cities, including the capital Baghdad and Basra and Fallujah, which led to 13 deaths. In mid-August, 70 people were killed and more than 300 wounded in a series of bomb blasts, including suicide and car bombs and shootings seemingly coordinated across the country. Iraqis are worried about setting off a chain of violence similar to what happened in 2006 when the Shiite Golden Mosque in Samarra was bombed, eventually culminating in internecine warfare that left thousands dead. Politically, Iraq is struggling to stabilize, with decisions being postponed for a year and a half over cabinet positions after the last elections. Iraq's oil wealth is paying off, but high levels of corruption and government disarray have undermined it. The violence on the streets and the political deadlock comes just months before U.S. forces are due to withdraw from Iraq. U.S. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta has made it clear that he hopes the Iraqi government will extend that deadline. The Associated Press, which keeps account of the numbers of troop fatalities in Iraq, reported that as of August 30, 2011, at least 4,474 members of the U.S. military had died in the Iraq War. With the 10th anniversary of the September 11, 2001 attacks approaching, there is increasing retrospection over the post-9/11 decision of the Bush administration to launch the war in 2003. Despite the blunders and outright lies over weapons caches and Iraqi links with al-Qaeda, and despite the chaos that continues to plague Iraq, former Vice President Dick Cheney, during an NBC interview about his new book, defended the U.S. war. He called it, quote, sound policy, and added, I don't think that it damaged our reputation around the world. Meanwhile, a Senate-appointed commission on wartime contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan has found that private contractors and grants in Iraq and Afghanistan resulted in $30 billion of wasted tax dollars over the past 10 years. Joining me on the line today is Raed Jarar. He is an Iraqi-American blogger and political analyst based in Washington, D.C. You can read his writings at raedinthemiddle.blogspot.com. Welcome back to Uprising, Raed.
Thank you for having me.
So when we last spoke with you in July, it was about a month after 15 U.S. soldiers had been killed and when Defense Secretary Leon Panetta was very strongly pressuring the Iraqi government to invite the U.S. to stay past its December withdrawal date. With the violence that has just been occurring over the past couple of weeks, it seems to provide the perfect pretext for Panetta to make his case.
I agree with you. I think the excuses that have been used by the U.S. Pentagon and by their Iraqi allies to justify a longer U.S. occupation is to point out the instability in Iraq. This has been the argument for the last 8 years, that we need the U.S. a little bit longer because Iraq is not stable enough. You know that I'm very critical of this security argument or linking the U.S. withdrawal to security because I'm against the basis of the argument. The basis of this argument is that the U.S. is there securing Iraq, that we are a part of the solution there, while I think we are a part of the problem. The reason that Iraq is not stable, the reason that the Iraqi government is not legitimate, is not seen as legitimate by its people, is the U.S. presence. So we can't fix these things by prolonging the presence.
Well, let's explore that argument a little bit further about how U.S. actions can be traced to the current violence. Who is directly perpetrating the violence today? Is it even known? And how do you draw the line from those responsible to the presence of U.S. troops?
There are many people who are responsible and have the capability of planning and conducting these attacks. The problem in Iraq is that for the last 8 years, the Iraqi government has failed to investigate the attacks and find who is behind them. Unfortunately, after the attacks, they just send fire trucks to wash up the scene without having criminal investigations. So we end up relying on political analysis to see who is benefiting from the attacks and who is behind them politically, more or less. And now the problem is that once the U.S. Started pressuring the Iraqi government again to prolong the occupation, and this is what we discussed during our last conversation in July, the mere fact that that conversation started, that that pressure started, led to more violence in Iraq. Because those who want the U.S. to stay started destabilizing the country, and that's their best argument to justify an occupation. And those who don't want the U.S. to stay started attacking the U.S. troops and killing them because that's the way that they are sending a political message against the U.S. Occupation. So that's what's worrisome in Iraq, that the lack of a strong leadership and clear message from President Obama that we are going to stick to the deadline and withdraw. Just the ambiguity in that message leads to violence because you end up having different political parties trying to advance their agendas by putting bombs in the streets.
So are you saying that there are forces in Iraq who basically draw their power from the presence of the U.S. troops because that's what gives them security, money, et cetera, and since they rely on the occupation, they'd like to see it continue?
Absolutely. The current Iraqi ruling parties, they know 100%. They understand completely that their presence is linked to the occupation. To the presence of the U.S. occupation. They cannot stay as Iraq's rulers without a U.S. tank protecting their kill zone. And they understand that for their own security and their own survival, they need the U.S. occupation to stay. And that's why they will do whatever is needed to keep the U.S. there, to keep the U.S. in that quagmire and help protect them there. In addition to that, there are a number of regional countries that wish ill to both the U.S. and Iraq, people who don't like the U.S. or they don't like Iraq, and they would love to see the current situation continue. They want to see the current, the U.S. stuck in Iraq to undermine the U.S. and undermine Iraq. This includes governments like Iran, or other regional powers that do not wish to see a strong, prosperous Iraq take its position in the region again and become a regional player. So there are so many people who are interested in destabilizing Iraq and destroying the country. And unfortunately, without a very clear message from President Obama that the withdrawal is going to happen, based on a timeline as was agreed upon, rather than linking it to security on the ground, we would be going in this circuit.
Well, Raed, the forces that would like stability are often corporate forces, transnational corporate forces that are interested in Iraq's oil, and Iraq's oil ministry is going to be meeting on September 11th with representatives from 40 world energy firms that are going to be bidding for long-term contracts. And usually, oil companies like stability in whatever countries they're doing business in. How do you see Iraq's oil future playing out, and the role that oil companies are or aren't playing in the current instability?
Yeah, I mean, it's true that oil companies prefer stability and they prefer dealing with a central government because that makes it easier for them to sign, contracts and pump the oil out of the country. But in the case of Iraq, I think there are many other competing priorities. I mean, I'll give you an example. The oil companies, the oil, lobby in the U.S. failed to pressure the Iraqi government to pass an oil law that would keep all the contracts centralized. And in the time of the Bush administration, they were okay with decentralizing the oil contracts, and they are still pushing for that now because their allies in Iraq want that. So sometimes their geopolitical interests and the interests of their allies, they change the plan. I think the oil companies would like to see a stable Iraq, but their way. They want to see a stable Iraq in their way. They don't want to see a sovereign Iraq that is stable and run by nationalist Iraqis who would sell the oil to benefit their country, who would nationalize the oil and keep it owned by Iraqis. Mm-hmm. They would love to see a stable Iraq that they control, that they can pull the plug or start pumping oil whenever they want. So it's not that they want the best for Iraq, they want the best for themselves.
I'm speaking
so
with...
That's why I don't think their definition of a stable Iraq is the same as your definition or mine.
I'm speaking with Ra'ed Jarar, an Iraqi-American blogger and political analyst based in Washington, D.C. We're talking about escalating violence in Iraq, particularly in the month of August. Now, the former Vice President Dick Cheney, in publicizing his new book, is looking back on the Iraq War, despite so much evidence that the Iraq War has been a failure from the origins and the justification created to launch the war to how it has played out and its consequences on Iraq. He is happy to call it sound policy and to rewrite history, if you will, even though the troops are still on the ground. I had quoted that he said, "I don't think that the Iraq War damaged our reputation around the world." How do you respond to that?
I don't know whether we really need to respond to that seriously. I laughed when I heard that. I think it's very sad to see that a criminal like Cheney can come to the mainstream media and try to, sell his revisionist history. I don't think many people, even those who supported the war, buy any of these lies anymore. I don't think people who even bought the arguments that that the U.S. intervention in Iraq would be for the best of Iraqis and Americans, they don't believe it anymore because they saw the results. The last 20 years of intervention in Iraq and the last 10 years of intervention in Afghanistan had nothing but catastrophic results, nothing other than death and destruction and wasting money and blood from both sides. So I don't think people would support this, and I wouldn't really take any of these claims seriously, actually. Hmm.
Well, finally, Ra'ed, between now and the end of the year, a lot depends on not only the level of violence and the use of the security situation to try to justify an extension of the U.S. troops, but also on the Iraqi government itself. What do you think the prospects are for the troop withdrawal deadline to remain as it is in December, or is there a real danger it could be extended?
There is a real danger, but the real danger is not extending it through the parliament. I think the possibilities of the Iraqi parliament extending the U.S. presence are very, very low. Not because they don't want the U.S. to stay, but they feel scared of saying that publicly, and they feel scared of their constituencies and the anger of the people. What I think is a very scary possibility is that the Iraqi government, the executive branch, the prime minister and other people in the executive branch, would end up circumventing the entire system in Iraq and signing executive agreements that does not require executive agreements directly with the U.S. Government that do not require any parliamentary approval. And I think, there are some signs that they are attempting to do this, to sign agreements for what they call training. It's fake agreements, of course, just to relabel tens of thousands of U.S. troops to stay in Iraq under a different name. This would be completely rejected by the Iraqi public, and I'm sure it will not stabilize Iraq more. It will lead to more instability, more attacks against Iraqis and against American troops, and unfortunately, it will continue to destroy the country. So that's why I think, if I have one advice, one recommendation to your audience on what to do from now until the end of the year, there is one major issue, which is calling the White House and emailing the White House to request that President Obama commits to his promises, to the bilateral binding agreement that the U.S. signed with Iraq, and to his own promises. He promised the U.S. public over and over and over in the last few years that he will withdraw all of the U.S. troops by the end of this year and shut down all of the U.S. military bases. And I think this is the right time to put pressure on the White House, on President Obama, to play the leadership role that he must be playing, instead of being pushed around by the military establishment and caving at the last minute, as he usually does.
Well, Raed Jarar, I want to thank you, as always, for joining us. Raed Jarar is an Iraqi-American blogger and political analyst based in Washington, D.C. He recommends contacting the White House to urge President Obama to keep to the promise to withdraw troops from Iraq before the end of the year, by the end of the year. You can read Raed Jarar's blog at raedinthemiddle.blogspot.com. That's R-A-E-D in the middle.blogspot.com.